Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $200 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, spread, totals, player props.
$200 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In app only.
Did you know that through 7 weeks of the 2025 season, we've had 33 total lead changes in 26 different games in the final 2 minutes of regulation? That is the most for both lead changes and games with lead changes in the final 2 minutes in NFL history through the first 7 weeks of a season. I'm Cynthia Freeland. This is The Numbers Game. Let's break down the Sunday slate of Week 8 NFL games. I'm not trying to make it a habit to skip TNF in any way, shape, or form. I was still feeling a little banana, so just trying to get that health under control. I'm good. I'm here. We are good to go. However, we need to do some accounting from last week. Of the 15 games, I went 10-5 straight up, 7-8 against the spread, and 12-3 on totals, bringing my season to 59.3% straight up, 46.7% against the spread, and 62% on totals. There are 11 games on Sunday. Six teams are on a bye: Detroit, Arizona, the Rams, Seattle, Vegas, and Jacksonville. So keep that in mind if you're playing fantasy. However, it is a very important national holiday. It is National Tight Ends Day this Sunday. And so far this season, tight ends have combined for 1,139 receptions, 11,157 receiving yards, and 97 receiving touchdowns entering week 8. Those are all the most at the position in a season entering National Tight Ends Weekend in the history of the holiday, which is since 2019. So just a huge long history. Just kidding. But 2019 is actually longer than I thought. Anyways, there are some notable tight ends who are on byes. Of course, Trey McBride, Sam Laporta, Brock Bowers, Brenton Strange, AJ Barner, Tyler Higbee. But don't worry, the National Tight End Day founder, that's George Kittle, he is playing, so that is where we should start. San Francisco heads to Houston in a game where the Texans are favored by 1 point, and the total in this one is 41.5. My model says 21-19 in favor of Houston. There are injuries all around here, which is part of what drives a lower scoring game than expected. San Francisco added their center, Jake Brendel, and of course, pass rusher Bryce Huff to the not going to play list. And Houston is likely without Nico Collins, who has a concussion. So let's start with the Niners offense against the Texans defense, because Christian McCaffrey is as consistent as they come this season. He leads the league with 185 touches and 981 scrimmage yards. That's 31 more touches than the next closest player. We saw a bit of a vintage look from him on Sunday Night Football last week against Atlanta, but overall he leads the NFL with 46 missed tackles and negative 88 rushing yards over expected, which are the fewest in the NFL. That is not the vintage part. We usually see him rush for more. It's part of what has been going on. He's been catching more passes. Now, San Francisco's offense in general averages 4.9 yards per carry on design runs when Kittle is on the field versus 3.1 yards per carry when he is not on the field. I think it's going to be Mac Jones again, and he leads all qualified passers with a 280.8 passing yard per game average this season and no touchdowns with 3 interceptions in his last 2 games. Now, he had 6 touchdowns with 1 interception in his first 3 starts, though, so what are we going to get? Well, we know Houston's defense, they are stingy. They've allowed just 14.7 points per game this season, the fewest in the league. They're actually the first team in NFL history to lead the league in points per game allowed, so the fewest allowed, but still have a losing record through the first 7 weeks of a season. Switching over to Houston's offense against San Francisco's defense, well, CJ Stroud is averaging just 4.9 yards per attempt when he's pressured this season. That's 9th lowest in the league. He has 1 touchdown with 2 interceptions under pressure. And the Texans overall are only converting 31% of their third downs. That ranks 31st or 2nd last in the league. Now, we do have a Nick Bosa effect, or a lack of Bosa effect, and maybe that's now compounded with no Bryce Huff, but here's what we're looking at. The 49ers have pressured opponents on just 24% of dropbacks without Nick Bosa on the field this season. That number was 39%. The pressure rate was 39% when Nick Bosa was there. So 39%, that would rank 4th best, and 24%, that would rank last. And now you don't have Bryce Huff either. Well, where does the math net out? a 2-point win for the Texans, 21-19, because of their defense and one stat that stands out about how well they've shut down play action. So the Texans have allowed negative 0.46 EPA per dropback against play action this season. That is the fewest in the league by 0.33 per dropback. That is a lot. Houston has allowed 32% on dropbacks in terms of success rate against play action. That is the lowest in the league by almost 5 percentage points. And the Niners, they are earning negative 0.09 EPA per dropback using play action this season. That's ninth fewest in the league. They also have 2 interceptions with play action this season, which is tied for the third most. One to watch here. Let's just keep it really simple. It's Christian McCaffrey to reach Pater. Anytime, an anytime touchdown. I wanted to talk about Kittle, but since we don't know all of the different dynamics, his market is a little bit unsettled right now. So let's just keep it simple and go Christian McCaffrey, touchdown. Colts rookie Tyler Warren leads all tight ends with 439 receiving yards. So let's head to Indianapolis next. This is the second installment of Colts and Titans this season. It is also projected to be the most lopsided game this week, which is usually the order that we go in. However, George Kittle just had to jump the line because it is his special holiday. But this time it's Tennessee at Indianapolis, and the Colts are favored by 2 touchdowns, 14 points. The total in this one is set for 47 points. My model says Indianapolis wins this one 32-17. Now, looking at the Titans offense against the Colts defense, one area that I expect to improve is how many sacks Cam Ward is taking. Right now, he's been sacked 30 times. Now, I say taking very explicitly because some of that is actually on the O-line. Some of it is on him and some of it's the scheme. And by the way, those 30 sacks, that's the most through 7 games by a rookie since David Carr in 2002. So I think the scheme here needs to reflect higher probability, quicker passes to help get him going. Why? Because right now his completion percentage, 57.6, that is last among 34 qualified quarterbacks, and he has just 4 passing touchdowns. Now the Colts, it could be difficult against their defense that has a 39% pressure rate. That's third highest in the league. Switching it over to the Colts offense against the Tennessee defense. Well, just overall, the Colts are 6-1. They're currently the number one seed in the AFC. They're 5-0 against AFC opponents. They lead the league with a plus 92 point differential. The next closest team, plus 64. They're the number one scoring offense at 33.1 points per game. They have 232 points scored through the first 7 games. That's the most by their franchise in the Super Bowl era. How are they doing it? Balance. They lead the league with 16 rushing touchdowns. And the Titans defense, they've allowed 12 rushing touchdowns, the most in the league. Daniel Jones also has the highest passing touchdown interception ratio at 5-0, under pressure in the league. And by the way, until it's not true, he still has a higher passer rating when pressured than not, 110.3 versus 103.6. Bottom line, I project a big win for the Colts, 15 points, 32-17. Watch out for Jonathan Taylor on inside rushes. The Colts have run inside on 55% of their attempts, the fourth highest rate. Now, usually when you have a high rate, like some of the other things come down. Not for the Colts. They're averaging 0.17 EPA per inside rush, most in the league. They have a 52% success rate on them, third highest rate in the league. And Tennessee's defense is susceptible to them. They are allowing 1.6 rushing yard over expected per inside attempt this season. That's the most in the league. They're also allowing 2.3 yards before contact per inside rush. Again, the most in the league. Let's keep it simple again for what to watch on this one. And let's go with Jonathan Taylor to score a touchdown. Now, if you want to be less chalky, let's do 2 touchdowns. He's had more games with 3 or more rushing touchdowns this season than the rest of the NFL combined. He's had 3 such games. One of them came against Tennessee in their first matchup. The rest of the NFL, just 2. So Jonathan Taylor, go for 2 touchdowns, all right? Buffalo at Carolina is where we will go next. The Bills are 7.5-point road favorites. The total in this one is set for 45.5. I have Bills winning by 8 points, 28-20, so a higher scoring game where the Bills win by more than expected. Starting with the Bills offense against the Panthers defense, Josh Allen is averaging 8.5 yards per pass attempt with no pressure this season. That's 6th most in the league. Why do I say no pressure? Because Carolina has the second lowest pressure rate this season at 26%. They did get a little feisty last week against the Jets, but this Bills O-line is much stronger. And should they get to Josh Allen, he also is averaging 8.2 yards per quick pass this season, which is the most in the NFL. He also has a 0.27 EPA per quick pass, the 7th most in the league. And Carolina, they've allowed 7 touchdowns on quick passes this season, tied for the 5th most, along with 0.16 EPA per quick pass, which is 11th most. Switching over to Carolina's offense against Buffalo's defense, the name of the game here, run the football. Overall, they're averaging 140.1 rushing yards per game, third most in the league. Now, since week five, that number goes up to 193.3 rushing yards per game, along with 35.3 carries per game. Both of those figures are the most in the NFL since week five. Now, the Bills, they have allowed 156.3 rushing yards per game. That is second most in the league this season. Andy Dalton has 7 passing touchdowns, 6 interceptions, and 82.5 passer rating. All of those have come in 5 starts since the beginning of last season. And the Bills defense, they have allowed the second fewest passing yards per game at 167.2. So again, running, the name of the game. But the Bills defense is still really banged up. So many different ways to potentially target this defense for Andy Dalton. Bottom line, I have the Bills winning this one 28-20. In very large part because of how well they can control the ball. I told you Carolina is third in the NFL in rushing yards per game, but the Bills, they are ahead of them. Buffalo did lose 2 straight games after starting 4-0. They just had their week 7 bye, but Josh Allen, he has never lost 3 games in a row in his career. Buffalo has also won each of their last 10 games following a bye week, which is the longest active streak in the league and the second longest since bye started in 1990. But they will actually be stopping Carolina's streak as they've won 3 straight for the first time since 2021. The one to watch here, I love a James Cook touchdown, which is a very low risk, but I also like Josh Allen to not throw an interception. It's confidence rankings time. These numbers are for straight up wins. Now, if you would like to know my confidence against the spread or on totals, you can get all of that. It's at Numbers Game, NUMBERSGA.ME. You can just download the spreadsheet. Every Wednesday, it is updated. You can get all of my rankings against the spread, all of my rankings straight up, all of my rankings on totals. And maybe you should like double check the totals one, because for whatever reason this season, my model has been more dialed into totals than maybe ever before. But if you're looking for survivor picks, this week, my strategy with 6 teams on a bye would be to use one of the more confident picks, maybe burn one of those bigger teams that you've been saving. And for me, anyone in the top 5 falls into that category. And Atlanta actually also falls into that. They're number 4. So let's go there next. The Falcons host the Dolphins in a game where Atlanta is favored by 7 points and the total is 44.5. My model says Atlanta wins this one 27-19. So 8 points. Now, I know you came here for this hard-hitting left-handed information, but you must know that Tua Tagovailoa will face a left-handed quarterback for the second straight game. He lost to Dylan Gabriel and the Browns 31-6 in week 7, but this lefty-on-lefty situation, it continues again this week. I have no idea why, but I'm just fascinated by those stupid left-handed stats. Anyways, I love them. I hope you do too. Okay, but on to the more predictive notes, starting with the Dolphins offense against the Falcons defense. One thing I can tell you, there will be lots of motion ahead of the snap for Miami. They use it at a league high rate, 79%. They average 5.4 yards per play when they do, which is slightly below the league average of 5.5. Now, something interesting about Devon Achan. Well, he's been used in motion on just 18% of his snaps, but he has the 4th most touches at 23 when in motion, and he's gained a league high 80 rushing yards on said touches. So Achan is kind of a good trick when it comes to motion. He's also one of 3 players with 400 or more rushing yards and 200 or more receiving yards this season. Now, maybe rushing and rushing tricks will be the play here, because Atlanta's defense has allowed 141.2 passing yards per game. That is the best, lowest in the NFL and the fewest allowed by any team in a season since the 1982 Dolphins. They allowed just 114.1. I like the symmetry there. Switching to Atlanta's offense against Miami's defense. Well, Bijan Robinson has accounted for 40.5% of the Falcons' scrimmage yards. If it holds for the season, it would be the highest in a single season since Adrian Peterson had 41.6% in 2012. Now, I'm just thinking maybe Bijan has time to just increase the percentage. No big deal. Anyways, he already leads the NFL with 152.3 scrimmage yards per game, which is 7th most in NFL history. And Miami, their defense isn't great against the run. They've allowed 159.3 rushing yards per game. That is last in the NFL, and specifically to opposing running backs, 128.3. Also, that ranks last as well. One quick note in the passing game, Michael Penix Jr. last week went 0-for-9 under pressure against the 49ers. That is the most attempts without a completion under pressure since 2023. Obviously, that's league-wide. So interesting, if they can get pressure on him, potentially that could disrupt the game plan. Bottom line here, I have Atlanta winning 27-19. Why? Because of Atlanta's defense. Their blitz rate is 48%, highest in the NFL, and they have allowed negative 0.16 EPA per dropback when they blitz. That's the sixth lowest. And Tua Tagovailoa, he has a negative 0.04 EPA per dropback against the blitz this season. That ranks 22nd in the NFL. And his average time to throw of 2.67 seconds is fifth highest in the league. But Atlanta, they've allowed negative 0.09 EPA per quick pass this season, the third lowest rate in the league. It's a bad matchup for the quick passer in Tua Tagovailoa. The one to watch here, why yes, I do have a Bijan Robinson touchdown. But let's be slightly more fun here, as in Devon Achane to rush for more than 61 yards, which he does in 59% of my simulations. And remember, I am a very conservative modeler. The next projected touchdown difference game this week is Cleveland at New England. The Patriots are favored again by 7 points, and the total in this one, 40.5. My model says New England wins by 6, 24-18. Starting with the Browns offense against the Patriots defense. Fun fact, Dylan Gabriel's a lefty. Just kidding. He is a lefty, but that's not what I was going to say. I was going to say he's the sixth quarterback in the Super Bowl era with 100 or more passing attempts and zero interceptions in his first three career starts. But the more predictive metric here is a strength on strength situation in the run game. The Browns have averaged 4 yards after contact per carry on designed runs. That's third most in the league. Quinshon Judkins, he's the main driver of this. He's averaged 4.1 yards after contact per carry, the third most among all rushers with at least 50 attempts. However, the Patriots defense has allowed just 2.5 yards after contact per carry. Now that's the third fewest in the NFL. As for New England's offense against Cleveland's defense, Drake May's arm is the advantage. He leads the NFL with a plus 2.31 EPA per deep pass this season. That is the most in the league by 0.78. That's bananas. I'm just going to say that again. He leads the NFL with a plus 2.31 EPA per deep pass. Okay. He also has a plus 34% completion percentage on deep passes this season. That's the highest in the league by 6 percentage points. And Cleveland, they have allowed 3 deep passing touchdowns this season, tied for the fifth most in the league, along with the 10th highest success rate to deep passes at 44%. Now, a matchup that does matter here is Myles Garrett against the rookie left tackle Will Campbell. Campbell has allowed a team-high 27 pressures across 253 pass blocks. 11 of those have been quick pressures, which means ones that were surrendered in under 2.5 seconds. His 4.3 quick pressure rate allowed is ninth highest among 34 qualified left tackles. Myles Garrett, he's aligned on the right edge of the defense on 83% of his snaps, so forecasting a matchup with the left tackle. He's generated 13 quick pressures. That's fifth most, tied for fifth most in the league. And his 7.1 quick pressure rate is eighth highest among 77 edge rushers. Bottom line, New England shows their home crowd a 6-point win, 24-18. Now, yes, the Browns have the number one total defense. They're only allowing 256.1 total yards per game, and they're the only team to rank top 5 in both passing yards per game allowed at 173.7 and rushing yards allowed at 84.2. Now, that drives a closer than 7-point projection, but the Patriots get the win because, yeah, Drake May, he's the advantage. He has the highest passer rating this season at 116.4, which would be the highest in a season by any quarterback age 23 or younger ever, if it holds. He's the only player in NFL history with 200 or more pass attempts and 50 or fewer incomplete passes in any 7-game span within a season. That is wild. And my favorite, he has a perfect passer rating, 158.3 on deep passes with 4 touchdowns and no interceptions. That is bananas. So the one to watch here, let's just stick with this Drake May theme, to pass for more than 222 yards. I guess I maybe have 2 favorite Drake May stats. I'm allowing myself to do it. Okay. When throwing into tight windows, so those are defined as when his receiver has less than 1 yard of separation, listen to what happens. He's 20 of 32. 273 yards, 3 touchdowns, 0 interceptions. That is a 62.5 completion percentage, which leads the NFL by 14.5 percentage points. The rematch of NFC East foes from TNF, where the rookie running back from the victorious G-Men, Cam Scataboo, chest bumped Ryan Fitzpatrick in an iconic moment a few weeks ago. This time everything happens in Philly, but you know what I'm talking about. It's Giants at Eagles. The Eagles are favored by a touchdown at home. The total in this one, 44 points. My model says a very healthy win for Philadelphia, 28-19. The Giants offense against the Eagles defense is where we will dig in. So very fun is the fact that Jackson Dart's 10 offensive touchdowns since becoming the Giants starter in week four are the fourth most in the NFL. He also leads all quarterbacks in rushing yards per game as a starter at 44.5. That's very fun too. Jackson Dart has been blitzed on a league high 39% of his dropbacks. He's also faced pressure from an unblocked pass rusher on a league high 14% of dropbacks. But over half of those unblocked pressures have come when the defense sends four or fewer rushers, aka when they're not blitzing. So interesting. Dart's success against the blitz is higher than not against the blitz, with a 54% success rate when defenses rush five or more, which ranks fourth highest, compared to a 35% success rate against no blitz, which is lowest in the league. In week six, the Eagles blitzed Dart 46% of the time. We will see if they change things up this time. Cam Scataboo's six receiving touchdowns are the second most by a Giants player through seven career games in the last 50 seasons. Who's he behind? Saquon Barkley. You can tell your friends that stat. But the matchup I'm looking at here is how Scataboo forces missed tackles, which he has done 31 times since taking over the Giants backfield in week three. Only one running back has more such forced missed tackles than him. It's Christian McCaffrey with 37. Scataboo's gained 316 rushing yards after contact since he became that starter. That's fourth most in the league. And the Eagles defense, they've missed 67 tackles this season. That's seventh most in the league. In week six, Scataboo forced five missed tackles. As for Philadelphia's offense against New York's defense, the Eagles offense used jumbo personnel, so six or more offensive linemen, on nine plays in their week seven win over the Vikings. They only used jumbo two times in weeks one through six combined. They averaged 11.4 yards per play on those nine total snaps, and they've now brought their average up to over 10 yards per play when they use jumbo. I know it's a very small number of snaps, but this is very important against that Giants front. By the way, they averaged 10.7 yards on those plays. That leads the NFL. Jalen Hurts also had the most deep passing yards in a game in his career last week at 215, which is largely because the Vikings decided to focus on taking away Saquon Barkley and thus challenging Hurts to say, "Hey, beat me over the top." Hurts was like, "Where's Devontae Smith? Okay, fine, let's do it." We also know that Saquon Barkley now has five games with fewer than 60 rushing yards in a row after only doing this twice all last season. Now, part of that is because of efficiency on outside runs, where he's averaged 4.2 yards per carry this season, which is more than two full yards fewer than his average last season, which was 6.6. In week six, Barkley carried the ball five times for 43 yards on such runs. He had an 8.6 yard per carry average there, including 40 yards gained after three combined forced missed tackles. Now, the Giants, they've allowed league highs in yards after contact per carry at five and success rate at 57% on designed runs directed outside the tackles this season. That is the highest success rate allowed by any defense in a season over the past decade. So it's still a good area to focus on. Now, here are the full numbers just so you have them. The Eagles rushed to the outside on 52% of their attempts this season. That's the 14th highest rate, where they've earned 1.2 rushing yard over expected per outside rush, the fourth highest rate. The Giants have allowed 0.33 EPA per outside rush. That's the most in the NFL. And of course, a 56% success rate to such rushes, another area that's the highest in the league. Bottom line, I have the Eagles winning by 9, 28-19. Now, Jalen Hurts overall just has more answers now as this offense has developed. But he had some uncharacteristic flaws against the G-men last time around that shouldn't repeat. One example is against Cover Zero, which he's faced on a league-high 10% of his dropbacks this season. Overall, he's 15 of 23 for 152 and six touchdowns with an interception on such passes. He gets rid of the ball in 1.95 seconds on average against Cover Zero, which is the quickest time to throw in the league. He also has the most dropbacks without taking a sack against Cover Zero at 24. The Giants used Cover Zero against Hurts on 4 of 7 dropbacks inside the red zone during their week 6 meeting. They allowed two completions for 12 yards and a touchdown, but they also had a very crucial interception. That is not likely to continue because this is usually an area or a type of defense that Jalen Hurts is very good against. Now, if the Giants do win, though, it will be their first time sweeping the Birds since 2007, which was also a Super Bowl season for New York. The one to watch here, yes, I am going for it. I'm doing the Saquon Barkley note here. Saquon to have more than 82 rushing yards. I know that he has not topped 60 in five games. I just mentioned that. But between Jumbo and the opportunity, my model spits out 98 yards on the ground in the median scenario. This next list is all due to Reg Thunder. Thank you so much for the comment to do a tight end themed segment for this episode. It is a great suggestion. Please keep them coming. I do read them. I work for you. I want to make sure I'm giving you everything you want. So let's go with a five tight end stat to track situation, all of which happen in at least 45% of my model simulations. Why 45%? Because we like value, darn it. Number one, Eagles tight end Dallas Goedert to top 41 receiving yards against the Giants. Now, he usually ends up in the 30s, but he's topped 41 in two games this season. One was against New York in week 6, where he had 110 yards on 9 grabs. But mostly, I just think this will be a more fast-paced, higher-scoring game, thus more opportunity for Goddard. Number two, Giants tight end Theo Johnson to have more than 32 receiving yards against the Eagles. Last week against the Broncos, we saw the next step in his connection between Jackson Dart and where they're all trying to go with this. He had 66 yards and a touchdown against that Denver Broncos defense. I just think 32 yards is too few. Theo Johnson, more than 32. Number three, Colts rookie tight end Tyler Warren to score a touchdown against Tennessee. I have him down for 5 receptions, 53 yards, and he scores in 49% of simulations. Number four, Pats tight end Hunter Henry to score a touchdown against the Browns. I know I had this last week and it went to Austin Hooper, which just means to me that he's due, but also he still has that super high red zone target share. And number five, Ravens tight end Mark Andrews to have more than 35 receiving yards against the Bears in Lamar Jackson's return. Happy National Tight End to all. Let's move on to Baltimore. The Bears take on the Ravens coming off of their bye. Baltimore's favored in this one at home by 6.5 points. The total here is 50 points. Now, there are still some question marks at the time of this recording. Right now, I have Baltimore winning by 2 points, 27-25. Of course, that does include Lamar Jackson, but some of the other question marks, it does not necessarily include. The thing I feel more confident about is Chicago to keep it closer than 6.5 points, although I still very, very strongly believe Baltimore will win. So let's start with the Bears offense against the Ravens defense. Caleb Williams' time to throw is averaging 3.17 seconds. That's the longest in the league. It would be the third longest of any qualified quarterback in a season in the Next Gen Stats era if it held to the end of the season. Against the Blitz, he's doing great. 7 touchdowns, 0 interceptions, and a 137.2 passer rating. It's actually the second best passer rating against the Blitz behind just Jared Goff. Maybe there is part of where like the Ben Johnson magic is manifesting. The Ravens, they've blitzed on 29% of dropbacks. That's 13, so closer to league average. Chicago has won 4 consecutive games after starting 0-2. Now, the past 2 games since their bye, we've seen the run game really improve. So 183.5 rushing yards per game after just 102.3 in weeks 1-4. Baltimore's defense has allowed 194 points through their first 6 games. That is the most through 6 games in a season in franchise history for them. Remember, they are coming off their week 7 bye. Now, in terms of Baltimore's offense against Chicago's defense, well, Lamar Jackson is averaging 0.78 EPA per dropback with play action this season. That's the best in the NFL, the most. He also has a 72.4 success rate using play action. That's the highest in the league by over 8 percentage points. Chicago, they have allowed the highest dropback success rate against play action, 67%, and the second most EPA per dropback to it at 0.45. They also, funny, interesting note here, they have 3 or more takeaways in each of their last 4 games, which is tied for the longest streak by any team since the Steelers' 5-game streak in 2019. But they're last in yards per play allowed. So they lead the league with 16 takeaways, and they rank last in yards per play allowed. Interesting. Bottom line, I have a 2-point win for the Ravens, 27-25, because of an advantage in their run game. Baltimore has run to the outside on 62% of their attempts, the third highest rate in the league, where they're averaging 1.8 rushing yard over expected per attempt this season, the most in the league. Chicago has allowed 2 yards over expected per outside rush this season, which is second most in the league. They've also allowed 0.13 EPA per outside rush this season, which is fifth most. The one to watch here, Derrick Henry, to have more than 86 on the ground. I also like a trip to the end zone for him, but I want to talk about this 86. Why? Because we kind of talk about regression in terms of something that's too high and it comes back down to earth, but it also works when something that has been low, can it kind of bounce back to where its average is as well? And that's what I'm talking about with Derrick Henry and forcing missed tackles. So far this season, he's only done it on 14% of his carries. That's actually the lowest rate among all players with at least 75 carries. But he has never had a season below 22% since Next Gen Stats started tracking in 2018. So that figures to raise back up regression, happy regression for that. Next up, it's the Jets at the Bengals. The home team, Cincinnati, is favored by 6.5 points. The total in this one, 44.5. I have a 5-point win for the Bengals. Joe Flacco gets another win, 25-20. Now, I'm starting with the Jets offense against the Bengals defense, but there's some question marks here, as in Justin Fields, is he going to play? Tyrod Taylor came in relief last week, but he's listed as having an injury, so I'm guessing we see Justin Fields, who happens to be the first quarterback to start 0-6, but not throw a pick since at least 1950. Another weird stat about this team is Breece Hall happens to be the only player with 50 or more touches and zero touchdowns. And by the way, there are 48 players this season with at least 50 touches. Now, on the Bengals side of things, their defense could be without Trey Hendrickson again. He's listed as day-to-day. And in week 7 without him, their average time to pressure was 3.2 seconds, which was nearly a half second longer than the rest of their season. So 2.74 when he was on the field. Now, entering week 7, Hendrickson accounted for 1/4 of the Bengals' pressures. He had 20 of them. Joseph Osai now leads the team with 21 entering week 8. And the next closest defender, though, is BJ Hill, who has just 10. Moving on to Cincinnati's offense against New York's defense. I don't actually think it takes much more than your eyeballs to tell you that Ja'Marr Chase and T. Higgins benefit from Joe Flacco. They actually each have over twice as many receptions per game and receiving yards per game with Flacco than when Jake Browning was the starter. Joe Flacco, he has 5 passing touchdowns with no interceptions in 2 games as the Bengals starter, which actually tied a franchise record for passing touchdowns in the first 2 games played with Cincinnati. It was Greg Cook in 1969, if you're looking for that piece of trivia. Okay, but one area that stands out is Ja'Marr Chase against man coverage. Good luck. The Jets play man at the 7th highest rate, 36%. They've allowed 7.2 yards per pass attempt in man coverage, the 7th highest rate. Ja'Marr Chase was targeted on half of his routes against man coverage last week. 12 targets on 24 routes. How many receptions did he have? 8. With 76 yards and a touchdown. Bottom line in this one, I have Cincinnati winning by 5 points, 25-20. Now, the Jets still don't have a win, but they lose close games. That trend continues here. The one to watch, another Chase, as in Chase Brown, to have more than 56 yards on the ground. We've seen that in exactly 1 game this season, and it was last week where he had 108 against Pittsburgh. However, the Jets have been vulnerable to explosive runs, and Brown being effective helps everything else work better for Cincinnati. It actually even helps the defense. Love complimentary football. Run game, chew up clock. Keep your defense off the field. Next up is Tampa Bay at New Orleans. The Bucs, the road team, are favored by 4.5 points. The total in this one, 46.5. My model says Bucs by 7, 26-19. Starting with the Bucs offense against the Saints defense, I make this look because there are a lot of missing pieces. Now, your likely snap leader is at outside receiver. Okay, we know Emeka Egbuka, but now also Tez Johnson. Love these rookies in this situation. Yes, we will see some Sterling Shepard, but we know we won't see Mike Evans, Chris Godwin, likely no Bucky Irving. So let's talk about our front runner for offensive rookie of the year. Emeka Egbuka has 267 yards and 4 touchdowns on deep targets. That is the most deep receiving touchdowns in the league and the 2nd most such yards this season. Baker Mayfield, he's also rushed for 162 yards on scrambles this season, 7th most in the league. He's forced 10 missed tackles on these runs and gained 88 yards after forcing these missed tackles. No other quarterback has recorded more than 5 missed tackles on scrambles, which is very fun about Baker, but also like feisty and aggressive, and I love it. The Saints defense, they've allowed 165 yards on opposing scramble runs this season. That's 7th most in the league. And they have a 26% missed tackle rate against scramble runs, the 4th highest in the league. So, I think Baker Mayfield's probably going to run for some yards. As for New Orleans offense against Tampa Bay's defense, Spencer Rattler has averaged just 5.5 yards per attempt from a clean pocket this season, the 2nd lowest in the league. But somehow under pressure, he's averaging 7.6 yards per attempt, which is 10th highest. This is why you need to like look at a lot of contextual stats, though, because that's fun. However, The efficiency from a clean pocket may be lower from a yard per pass standpoint, but five of his eight touchdown passes have come from such throws. The Buccaneers defense, they've allowed opposing passers to throw for 8.3 yards per attempt when failing to generate pressure, which is fourth highest in the NFL. So maybe that non-under pressure number goes up. Bottom line in this one, I have the Bucs by a touchdown, 26-19. Tampa's pressure rate is over 41%. It's actually second highest in the NFL. And there are only two teams who have a more than 40% pressure rate. It's the Bucs and just Denver. That's the only other one. Now, I kind of joked about those Spencer Rattler sets, but here's where it starts to become more crystallized. Three of his four interceptions have been when he has been pressured. Yes, despite more yards per attempt under pressure. And by the way, those three interceptions against pressure are tied for the fourth most in the league. As for the Bucs, three of their five interceptions that they've generated have been with pressure, and three interceptions with pressure, that is also tied for fifth most in the league. The one to watch here, Baker Mayfield to throw at least two passing touchdowns. He averages 293.8 passing yards per game following a loss over the last two seasons. That's second most in the league over that span. He has seven passing touchdowns with no interceptions on deep passes. That's the most deep passing touchdowns in the league. No other player has more than five. And he ranks third in the NFL with 307 passing yards on the run. Only Patrick Mahomes and Bo Nix have more. I understand I said at least two passing touchdowns, but I had to get all of that good Baker info in for you. It is weekly wildcard time. I am amending it this week because we have six teams on a bye. So we're going to go to not just touchdowns, but I've opened it up to guys who are going to have bigger than expected games. These are from people who we didn't draft in the first two rounds of fantasy. They don't lead the league in yards or touchdowns at their position. Some could call them sleepers, but not us. We're not sleeping on anyone. We would never sleep on their opportunity. These are guys who have elevated production odds this week. Number one, Bucs wideout Sterling Shepard to have more than 29 receiving yards against the Saints. I talked about the opportunity with so many injuries, and we know Baker wants to throw it. Number two, Bills receiver Keon Coleman to have more than 40 receiving yards against the Panthers. I think he could actually outgain Khalil Shakir in this matchup based on forecast routes and matchups. But again, all you need is him to have more than 40 receiving yards. Number three, Giants receiver Wandale Robinson to have more than 52 yards against the Eagles. He's been targeted on 35% of his routes on third down this season. That's the fifth highest rate in the league. And he has a 23% air yard share since Malik Nabers has been out. Number four, Pats wideout Stephon Diggs to have at least five receptions against the Browns. The Browns defense is fun and really great. Denzel Ward is underrated for sure, but the tight window production for Drake May drives at least five grabs for Diggs. And number five, Broncos receiver Troy Franklin to have more than 31 receiving yards against the Cowboys. Which brings us to our final two games of the day. The first one is Dallas at Denver. The Broncos are favored at home by 3.5 points, and the total in this one, 50.5. My model says a 4-point win for Denver, 27-23. So we kind of have to start with the finish for the Broncos last week because there's a little bit of poetry here and it's pretty cool. So NFL teams had lost 1,608 consecutive games when trailing by 18 or more points with less than 6 minutes remaining in the fourth quarter until week seven, the Broncos and Giants. So those 33 points scored by the Broncos in the fourth quarter, that is a franchise record. It is also the most points in a fourth quarter in NFL history by a team that was shut out after three quarters. Also, Demaryius Thomas, his number was 33, and he was posthumously inducted into the Broncos Ring of Honor. So there's a lot of magic in that one, but it's pretty cool to see Demaryius Thomas, 33. The whole thing is pretty fun. The Cowboys offense against the Broncos defense is where we will start. And this, to me, is by far the most interesting part of the game. The Cowboys have the NFL's number one total offense, 390.6 total yards per game. The Broncos have a top four or better ranked defense in terms of scoring at 18.1 points per game, that's fourth, and total defense where they rank third at 273.1 total yards per game allowed. Dak Prescott is second in the NFL in terms of passing touchdowns with 16, and the Broncos defense they've allowed tied for the second fewest passing touchdowns at 7. Dak Prescott has three or more passing touchdowns and zero interceptions in four straight games. That's the longest streak in Dallas history. But where is Dak especially good? Downfield passing, 10 plus air yard passes. He has a 120.4 passer rating with six touchdowns and just one interception on such passes. Now, Denver, they're allowing a 31.5 completion percentage on downfield passes. That is the lowest in the league. They're also allowing a 67.4 passer rating on such passes, which is fourth lowest. They also lead the NFL with 34 sacks and 65 quarterback hits this season. They have five players with three or more sacks. That's the most such different players in the league. And their 46.2 pressure percentage when not blitzing leads the league. They have the sixth highest pressure rate when blitzing at 36%. Nick Benito has 21.5 sacks since the beginning of last season, which is tied with Trey Hendrickson for the most. And remember, Trey Hendrickson was your sack leader last season. And his 24.5 pressure rate is the highest in the league. So lots of good things for this defense. But I want to know, will Javonte Williams get his revenge against his former team? He already has more rushing yards at 592 and touchdowns with six through seven games this season with the Cowboys than he had in 17 games with the Broncos last year. By the way, he had 513 yards with four touchdowns last season. His 463 rushing yards after contact are second most in the league, second most to just Jonathan Taylor, and his 142 rushing yards over expected actually pace the league. Now, on the other side of this, as in Denver's offense against Dallas's defense, well, Bo Nix has 605 passing yards and 673 total yards on third and fourth down this season, both lead the league. He also has a 77% completion percentage on passes thrown under 10 air yards. Have you watched your show before? Do we talk about Denver and screens every week? Hi, we're here. Just insert this to next week too. For good reason, because they are working for him. But again, lots of screens here. Bottom line here, a 4-point win for the Broncos, 27-23, because of a rushing advantage that Denver has. So Dallas, the defense has used a light box when defending runs 46% of the time. That's the 10th highest rate this season. And Denver has rushed into a light box on 48% of their rushes. That's the fifth highest rate. What happens when they do? Well, they're earning 1.5 rushing yard over expected against it, the fourth most in the league. They're also earning a 0.11 EPA per rush into a light box. That's the seventh most in the league. And Dallas has allowed a 0.18 EPA per rush with a light box this season. That's the fourth most in the league. They've also allowed 2.4 yards before contact per rush with a light box. That's the eighth most. You get what I'm saying here. Rushing against the light box is an advantage for Denver. However, my score keeps their theme of close games going, as six of their seven games so far have been decided by one possession. But this time, they win by more than their forecast to, because they're only forecast to win by 3.5 points, and I have four. The one to watch here, let's go back to the tight end theme. It's Cowboys tight end Jake Ferguson to have more than 40 receiving yards. He leads all tight ends with 51 receptions and six receiving touchdowns this season. But I'm going to use my Pat Surtain note here to say why it's good for Ferguson, even though I don't think that they'll see each other. Anyways, the story here is Pat Surtain has allowed just 17 receptions and 177 receiving yards with zero touchdowns on 30 targets. That's the second fewest receiving yards allowed. His 0.7 yards per coverage snap is the lowest among all defensive backs. Now, I am not saying that they will match up against each other. I am saying that it's going to be a lot harder on whomever else is tasked with handling Surtain. So I like Ferguson's odds to have a better catch situation. And the last game of the day, it's a dramatic one. It is Aaron Rodgers facing off against the Packers for the first time in his career on Sunday Night Football. He is Green Bay's franchise record holder in touchdown passes with 475 and passer rating with 103.6. He played 18 seasons there. And now those Packers come to Pittsburgh to take on the Steelers, his new team. Green Bay is favored by 3 points. The total is 44.5. Did I sell it hard enough? My model has a very dramatic 1-point win for Green Bay, 23-22. Starting with the Packers offense against the Steelers defense. So Aaron Rodgers uses quick passes. How about Jordan Love? Oh, he's averaging just 7.2 yards per quick pass this season. That's seventh most in the league. He has the sixth highest success rate using quick passes at 57%. And he has the third most EPA per quick pass at 0.41. Flipping it to the other side, as in the Pittsburgh offense versus the Green Bay defense, Aaron Rodgers has a 68.6 completion percentage, averages 211.7 passing yards per game. He has 14 touchdowns to just five interceptions and a 105 passer rating. All are the best marks since his 2021 MVP season with the Packers. He has 11 passing touchdowns against no blitz, which is tied for the second most in the league. And the Packers, they don't really blitz very often. Fourth lowest rate for them, just 20% of the time. Rodgers, quick passes. Here we go. We know this is a thing. He has the third quickest average time to throw, 2.63 seconds. But Micah Parsons leads the NFL with 41 pressures this season. He only played six games, so that's a wild number. But he's the only player in the NFL with a 20-plus quarterback pressure percentage and a 20-plus double-teamed percentage. So he's 21.8 in both of those. 21.8 for the pressure, 21.8% of the time he's double teamed. He can get there quick too. So that is very, very difficult for this O-line. Even though Aaron Rodgers can get the ball away quickly, still Micah Parsons is coming for him. Bottom line, I have a 1-point win for Green Bay, 23-22. Why? Because of balance on both sides of the ball here. As in, Green Bay's offense leads the NFL with a 49.3 third down conversion rate, and they're also taking care of the ball. They have just three giveaways, which is tied for the second fewest in the league. Now, on the other side of the ball, their defense, in addition to Micah Parsons being an animal, they're allowing the second fewest rushing yards per game at 76.5, which happens to be the lowest for their franchise since at least 1933, which is fun. But one more little piece of history here, a stat you can pull out for whomever wins. This would be the first time that the Packers have beaten the Steelers in Pittsburgh since Bart Starr was the quarterback, and that was week 12 of 1970. The one to watch here, it's Jordan Love to have at least two passing touchdowns. Time for Good for Six. I want to thank Emgly, E-M-G-L-I, who mentioned in the comments from last week that they would like to see a mix of some of the totals and against the spread picks in with some regular picks. So let's do it this way. Let's do three kind of player notes like normal, and then three overall notes that you can mix and match as you see fit. As always, they will be ordered from least to most risky. We'll give it a try this way. Let me know what you think. Number one, the Colts to beat the Titans. That can be a staple in any mix. I think of it as like butter when you're making cookies. You just need like a lot of it and it always makes things better. But I also think that the Colts to win by more than 14 points would be a great way to introduce smart risk. Number two, more than 44 total points in the Giants and Eagles tilt in Philadelphia. Number three, more than 44.5 total points in Buffalo at Carolina. Buffalo is missing so many pieces on their defense still, it ups the opportunity for Carolina to score. Number four, Ravens wide receiver Zay Flowers to score a touchdown against the Bears. Lamar Jackson is completing 64% of his downfield passes this season. That's the third highest rate in the league. He has seven touchdowns with one interception on them. Chicago, they've allowed nine touchdowns on downfield passes this season. That ranks 31st in the NFL. Only Dallas has allowed more with 10. Number five, Packers rookie wideout Matthew Golden to have at least four receptions against the Steelers. I wanted to go full touchdown here too, and you could consider that. But let's stick with at least four grabs. I love this play for DFS as well. And number six, the Niners tight end George Kittle to score a touchdown on the holiday that he invented. I don't know what the market's going to be. I don't know what the odds are going to be. I don't care who the quarterback is. Kittle, end zone. That's number six. I love it. That's it. That is the show for the Sunday slate of week 8 games. Thank you so much for hanging out. Please comment, like, subscribe, pass it along. Give me some notes on what you'd like to hear for future episodes. I love to incorporate them. It's been cool reading them as well. So I work for you. You tell me what you'd like me to get more notes on, and I'm your girl. I got you covered. If you want to go to Numbers Game and download my spreadsheet, you can go to numbersga.me, and all of those beautiful numbers are on just one little spreadsheet that you can do anything you want with. Again, thank you so much for your patience with whatever this illness going around is for me. I appreciate it. I'll be back for the Monday Night Football episode very shortly. But most importantly, enjoy the football. And of course, you can sleep in this week because there's no early game. So enjoy the sleep and the football.